Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this 20th of January. If you look at your calendar, it will say Inauguration Day on it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I think it does. It does on mine. Good morning. It is Inauguration Day and welcome. So just a programming note before we get officially started here. The NPR coverage of the inauguration begins at 10 o'clock, so we will have a shortened panel this morning from 9 to 10. And we'll go through, and it'd be very nice to hear what's on your mind as well. WAMC.org. It's panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce our panel right away. Since we have a shortened time, we'll get right to it. We have Ray Graff with us this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much. We had a very last-minute cancellation last night, and I emailed Ray at 11:30 p.m.
Yeah.
And he emailed me back at 1 a.m.
That's right. Said, I couldn't sleep after that. Thank you.
I said,
I'm in.
So thank you. Yeah. Teresa Bourgeois is here, communications consultant, and thank you very much for showing up.
Delighted to be here. I've been told by a dear family friend from Greenwich, I won't say his name, but that I have to be very positive today, and it's Inauguration Day honor of the country. So I'm going to do my best.
Thank goodness we're only on for an hour, right?
Yeah. Wow.
And our man about town, Alan Shartok, joins us from the wilds of New York City. Good morning, sir.
I'm here. And last night, we can talk about this if you like a little later. We went down to, I as an observer and Roselle as a participant, to the rally outside of Columbus Circle, and they say they had 25,000 people there. It looked like 100,000. And they had extraordinary people like Michael Moore, de Blasio, Ruffalo, Sharpton, Julianne Moore, Alec Baldwin, Rosie Perez, Marissa Tomei, Cynthia Nixon, Sally Fields, and Cher. Natalie Merchant, our Natalie, ended up the whole thing with Woody's song About America.
And what was the, was there a...
Oh, I forgot Al Pacino. I'm so sorry.
Oh, how can you forget Al Pacino? Yeah. My goodness. So what was the point? What was was there a mission, a goal? We are protesting this. We are a women's march. What was this?
Well, it was upbeat. I do know that that Mark Ruffalo, who I think is the best, said, if you're here to make trouble, we don't want you, leave. In other words, if you're here for violence or any other reason, we're not interested in having you, leave.
Good for him.
It really was quite something. And by the way, it wasn't Pacino, it was De Niro.
Ah.
We get them confused all the time. Don't
sorry,
we?
Sorry about that. All the Godfather, right?
Now what I saw on the what I saw on TV last night from that rally was that Alec Baldwin did his Trump impression.
Oh, he was hysterical. He didn't do only the Trump impression. He did some Trump impression, but also he spoke from the heart. About the way this thing was going and the kinds of tweets that were coming out, and he was magnificent as always.
The New York City rally last night. Well, we have a lot to talk about this morning. It is Inauguration Day. Right as we speak, the Trumps are about to meet the Obamas at the White House. The church service has concluded that the president-elect, at least president-elect for another hour and 43 minutes, and then he and Melania Trump are making their way to the White House and arriving, and they will be meeting there. They will be having the traditional tea in the Blue Room and then moving on to go out for the swearing-in ceremony, which again begins at 12 o'clock. So let us go and talk about some of the stories that are in the news this morning, and of course, inauguration related. Yes, right?
Let me ask you a question. Now,
go for it.
I've heard this two different ways, and I say inauguration, you say inauguration. I've heard NPR do it both ways. I've heard various anchors do it. Is it inauguration or inauguration?
That's swearing in. That's ridiculous. It's inauguration.
Yes, that's what I thought. That's what I thought.
Even in upstate New York, I've never heard inauguration.
You never heard inaugural?
No.
Oh, I've heard it three times in the last 12 hours on the radio.
What stations are you listening to?
I'm not saying.
So Donald Trump arrives.
However you say it, it's happening.
That's
how,
right.
And how would you say inaugurated? Inaugurated and inauguration.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
Well, thank you for bringing it up, though. I appreciate it. That's very
Can
nice.
I leave?
Donald Trump arrived in Washington the day before his inauguration as the nation's 45th president in a swirl of pageantry, but facing serious questions about whether his chaotic transition has left critical parts of the government dangerously shorthanded. Mr. Trump will be sworn in at noon today, but his team was still scrambling to fill key administration posts when he got to Washington on Thursday, announcing last-minute plans to retain 50 essential State Department and national security officials currently working in the Obama administration to ensure a continue. Thank you.
The inaugural is continue. All right.
A continuation of government services, according to Sean Spicer, the incoming White House press secretary. The furious final staff preparations included designating Thomas Shannon Jr., an Obama appointee, as the acting Secretary of State pending the expected confirmation of Rex Tillerson. This is interesting as well. As of Thursday, only two of Mr. Trump's 15 cabinet nominees, John Kelly to head the Department of Homeland Security and his nominee for Defense Secretary General James Mattis, had been approved by congressional committees and were close to assuming their posts.
Now, whose fault is that? Is it his for not submitting the names early enough, or is that Congress for dragging their feet?
I don't think it's. I don't think it was his in putting. He put the names forward in a timely fashion. The problem, from my understanding, Alan and Teresa, is the vetting that had to go place, the paperwork that needed to be in place, and then actually
the ethics reviews.
The ethics reviews that had to go into place
and are still underway.
And also, it seems like somewhat. Any transition is going to be, you know, they're talking about it being shorthanded and it was chaotic. And, well, isn't any transition like that when you're talking about the United States government, for goodness sakes, of turning over on a dime at 12 o'clock, that, of course, there are going to be issues, right?
Right. It's a very big task that has to be dealt with in a very short amount of time. Now, some say that this is slower than others, and I think it's in all of our best interest that they fill these positions as quickly as possible. The part that I'm not sure, and Alan, you may know this, is what do they do about the? I mean, there has to be an acting secretary of every one of these departments and agencies, and the only one I could find any information about is what they did about the State Department.
Well, I take it that the number two guy, whoever's there, the civil servants and others, will continue to run, you know, these agencies. And I think that it's probably a safe assumption, you know, that they will be in fairly good hands. But it's not a good sign. I know that Ray will be happy because the Jets.
I'm a Giants fan.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Because the Jets, Woody, whatever his name is.
Woody Johnson. Yeah.
Woody Johnson is going to be.
Woody Harrelson or Woody Johnson?
Woody Johnson
Woody
is Johnson. The owner of the Jets.
He's going to be the ambassador to the court of St. James. That made all the headlines.
Yeah, but I mean, let it be known that he hasn't even been able to hire a GM that's competent in the last 10 years. So who knows?
Maybe they're better off if he does go to St. James.
If there are three Jets fans who want to weigh in, it's panel at WAMC.org, and that's about all they have left. And Ian's one of them in the newsroom.
So when you look at these positions and what is of what is happening for the president-elect's part yesterday, he did have two, I thought, let me just bring this up, but he had two amusing quotes. One, And I say to your point, Teresa, of trying to be, you know, positive and all of that. I am trying to be that as well. I just want to say, but I do want to read these, so don't think that just because I'm reading them, I'm making fun. But he did say in the two statements yesterday, he said that his cabinet had the highest IQ of any ever assembled. Also, he said that. During a black tie dinner, he looked to the right, he looked to the left, and then said, "Tomorrow seems to be the big one," meaning the inauguration.
Just, I'm letting that speak for itself.
You know, the beauty of this whole thing is that every time he says something like this, it is a very positive thing. And I want to go along with you here, Teresa. And I'm going to tell you why. Because it assures us that no matter how dumb something is, it's free speech. And if he can have free speech, so can everybody else. You know, I got an interesting note from a guy who doesn't really like us that much this morning and writes to us every once in a while. And he was talking about the privatization of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is they announced that they're going to zero out the arts, if I'm getting this correct. And
the Department of the Humanities and Arts.
Arts. Zero them out. Get rid of them. And CPB says The Hill, which is our source, said we were, and Current Magazine, the Bible of our industry, if you want to use that word, said that they were going to privatize the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Well, a whole bunch of us have been scrambling around. This guy writes and says, this means, of course. No, he didn't say this means, of course, but he raised the question, that's the way they always do it, as to whether tax exemption would be taken away from public radio stations. Now, this is interesting stuff because in the old days, you'll remember when Ronald Reagan became the president, he didn't like public radio either, and he said, you don't give money to public radio, you know, it's from the government, you give it to the stations. In other words, he didn't like the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and the understanding was that the money that came to the stations would be, we would get, and then, of course, we all passed it back on to National Public Radio, which he didn't like very much. And so this is just another attempt to do that. Our letter writer says, you have no business taking public money at all because you're so fiercely partisan. And as far as I'm concerned, hey, if we have to, we'll do it any way they set it up. If we have to take it without being getting public money, we'll do it that way. That's just the way it's going to be.
The CPB has said in two statements, one being the federal investment in public media is vital seed money, especially for stations located in rural America and those serving underserved populations where the appropriation counts for 40% to 50% of their budget. The loss of this seed money would have a devastating effect. According to a 2012 report commissioned by the CPB, the loss of federal support would mean the end of public broadcasting. But they're not looking, but again, they're not calling for the complete removal. They're calling for the privatization, and that's what we don't know.
And we don't know what that is, right?
We don't know what that means. Yeah. Because you would say if it's the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and then it's privatized, that doesn't make sense, does it?
I'm assuming it can't be good. Let's put it that way. Whatever they mean by privatization, I think what they mean is they want to make public radio stations into commercial radio stations.
So that's we can run infomercials for copper pans late at night? Perfect.
And by the way, that's what they're going to say. If you run the copper pans in the middle of the night,
yeah,
you'll have enough money. You don't need our money.
I heard they work well.
I actually have a few.
So do we, actually. They're copper-ish.
Are you doing one right now? Are you practicing the infomercial on the copper
band? Delicious. Look, it'll melt a plastic cup.
Did you make this in a copper pan?
Delicious.
Is this the point where it's officially off the rails?
Yeah, yep. Oh, so.
That's what I do, Teresa.
I like it.
But Talon's point, we don't know. But also, Teresa, there's so much we don't know at this point.
Well, I think that's the key. One of the things that the president and the folks around him keep talking about is how these executive orders that they're going to do today and over the next 4 or 5 days. And what's amazing to me is how little information we have about what those are actually going to be. But I think suffice it to say, we're in for some very significant changes. That's putting it mildly.
I want to talk about some other issues because there's some things about the Trump Hotel and links to Russia and so forth that are making news. I want to get to those.
Indeed.
I'm going to wait till the other side of the break before we do that. Get to a couple of letters. Rich says, good morning, panel. Just realizing that I'm qualified for many Trump cabinet positions. If you don't count that, I'm not a billionaire. Deborah says, And Donald's word, your IQ is based on how much money you have, because if you're rich, it shows how smart you are. They are the richest but least educated.
So income quotient.
That's pretty good.
Income quotient.
Very clever.
You. Very nice.
Everyone's so surprised that I'm funny.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Pithy, just, really, actually?
Yeah, I think it's really good. I like it. This is hello, dear people. Regarding Joe's question, what was the message of the rally last night? We don't need to waste our time defining and clarifying our progressive message. Just defend the Constitution and democracy and do not normalize this unprecedented presidency. Okay, I didn't mean to demean it. I was just asking of what the agenda was. That's all.
Not to press the point too. Sorry.
I was just going to say, and Martin wrote, Joe, Ray, it is pronounced an ogre-ration.
Hey! Boy, everybody's a comedian today.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, again, not to press the point too much, but part of democracy is the peaceful transfer of power. And I've been thinking about what's going on in Gambia today, which is opposite of what's going on in the United States, which is, I think, if it's still the same as it was earlier today, the duly elected, the existing president is supposed to leave and the duly elected president be sworn in. And
he
doesn't want to go. And so there'll be a military conflict there. And so so at least today it is important to note that we do this peacefully. Not necessarily happily, but we do it peacefully.
With a lot of absences, 68 absences.
Well, it is.
That's the core of our democracy. And so in that sense, today's a day to celebrate the process, if not the people.
Well, I'm not celebrating the process, but I am acknowledging it. And I think that's the whole point about Barack Obama and what he's saying about being there and past presidents are saying about being there. Because if you lose that peaceful transference of power, you've lost everything.
Exactly.
Then would you be for or against 68 members of Congress not coming on principle?
Well, I think we discussed this yesterday, of course, Ray.
I wasn't listening. Watching a Copper Pan infomercial.
But I think it's a matter of conscience. We had quite a go around on this. There are those who say what I just said. And then there's the other side of me, which says, good. You know, the things that Trump has been saying, the way that he's been behaving is so dangerous that a protest is correct. And I happen to think that people have a point on both sides.
Peaceful
All right,
protest.
We're going to take a break there. We'll be back for the second half. Our coverage from NPR will begin at 10 o'clock. More panel right after this. Very nice. Great lead in music. Isn't that great?
Yeah, I think it's Tinsley Ellis.
Yeah, good stuff.
We
did get a letter from a listener, Phyllis, who wanted to know if there was a message being sent by playing the Rolling Stones song Heart of Stone as Donald Trump entered the Lincoln Memorial yesterday with Melania. That really happened.
It really they picked the music.
Hey, it could have been worse. Sympathy for the Devil. I mean, Highway to Hell, Yakety Yak, Don't Talk Back. I mean, there are any number of ones that could have been worse.
Pretty interesting, though, isn't it?
Wow.
All right.
And
weird.
Then tonight it's going to be My Way, right?
So wait a minute. Why, in fact, would they pick Heart of Stone? You were saying...
Why do they pick, during the campaign, the song that they used over and over is You Can't Always Get What You Want, You Get What You Need.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, why... The campaign selects... The inaugural committee.
Well, they like the Rolling Stones, right? So we know that. At least it's not like Street Fighting Man or something like that, you know?
It's their choice of music is fascinating.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Someone has quite a sense of, would it be called humor or sense of something?
I don't know. Sense of irony?
Sense of irony. There we go.
So how about sense of hell to come?
Well, who knows what the heck, it's a weird choice, that's all. There's probably a reason.
Well, we'll try to find out.
The kids will dance to it.
That's right. The kids will dance to it. He danced to it. The question now that is coming up is regarding the Trump Hotel in Washington and what is being called an ethical minefield. Conflicts that for months have been theoretical are now about to become real. This from the New York Times. Most immediately, a possible challenge by the federal government. It owns the building that houses Mr. Trump's hotel and has granted him a 60-year lease. From the moment he is sworn in as president at noon Friday, Mr. Trump may be in violation of that lease, given a provision that appears to prohibit federal elected officials from renting the old post office building. The Pennsylvania Avenue landmark that houses the hotel from the government. Guests of the hotel include foreign diplomats and politicians who could be looking to curry favor with Mr. Trump. But even the act of paying their bills as they check out after the inauguration may open Mr. Trump to a challenge that he has violated the U.S. Constitution, which prohibits federal government officials from taking payments or gifts from foreign governments. Teresa, I'll start with you because I know you've been talking about this issue for several weeks.
Right. And so this is fascinating to me. First of all, as a backdrop, it's one of my favorite buildings in Washington, D.C. It's just a gorgeous building and a landmark. And as I understand it, there'll be legal action on this soon after he is officially inaugurated, because once he is, he's in very apparent violation of the terms of the lease.
Don't you think, though, that he has a legal team that has vetted this and they said, well, there is one, at least one avenue where this is okay. This is permissible.
Well, but he knows, Ray, and he knows that this is problematic, because you remember when they trotted out the lawyer, she said that he's not going to take any of the profits from this. So what that meant to me was, I know this is trouble,
right?
And I'm going to do something about it. My question to all of you is, okay, let's assume he is in violation of the Constitution or the law. Who exactly is going to say, no, you can't do this?
Well, I think it's going to be litigated, don't you, Alan? I think that the issue will be, as I understand it, that there are other hotels in the city who will bring a case against him on this fact, and then it'll play out in the courts.
And that's exactly right, because for years I've been teaching, I've been saying, look, judges are politicians, especially when the higher up you go, the more political, if politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources, the more political these guys get. If you get to a Supreme Court, and by now you got a 5-4 political difference on that court, let me say right now that I don't think they're going to say no to him. I hope I'm wrong. But I think part of his bluffing his way through all of this stuff is, you know, I'm doing what I want and nobody's going to be able to lay a hand on me. I think that's what's going on.
One thing, there's a fun little side fact about this building that I came upon when reading about it. And when he was speaking last night at the hotel, he said that a total genius must have built this place. And he was talking about the history of this hotel. In fact, in 1964, there was an effort to tear the hotel down, and there was an outcry of public, so it shows a public protest helps, but the leader of that protest happened to be the head of the National Endowment for the Arts, and it was Nancy Hanks, the head of the National Endowment for the Arts, who convinced Congress to reverse its decision because it was such a public outcry. Now, Donald Trump, as you talked about earlier, is rumored to want to defund or end the National Endowment for the Arts, and as well as the CPB and other things. And so perhaps he would want to think about that, because without the National Endowment for the Arts, that building would not be standing today. And so there we go, a fun little fact that he might want to think about.
We got letters. We'll get to a few of these before we go to break. This one is from Molly, who says, today we honor, if not celebrate, the peaceful transfer of power in our government. And if we honor that shining example of our democracy, we should also honor the freedom of speech that allows us, in fact, encourages us to point out those actions of government that we consider wrong. It is our responsibility to protest those things we find harmful to our democracy and to our country.
You know, Joe, I love that letter, number one. And I can't tell you, we have one or two guys, trolls, who are writing us every day saying, you have no right to your opinion. You can't say what you want. You have to have other people. You have to people who are saying other things than what you're saying. Sorry, buddy, we don't do it that way. Freedom of speech is at the bottom of this. And while I have the microphone for a minute, let me just say that our whole First Amendment campaign is going on right now to fill up the lockbox, because we can't have a radio station if we don't have the money, particularly if they're going to take the money away. So so what do you get? You get two magnificent things for $150. Joe, tell us what you get.
Hey, Joe, tell us what you've won. You
it's
get a First
car.
Amendment T-shirt.
With a copper pot.
That's right.
Chevy Monza.
I love the T-shirt, by the way.
You get a First Amendment T-shirt. The color we've come up with, the description of the color is taupe.
Yeah, it's kind of a beige, right?
All right, beige, taupe, I don't know. It's a creamy color.
Yeah, it's a light puke gray.
Taupe, it goes with the legalization of marijuana.
What?
What?
What? It's
dope,
beige.
Taupe.
Okay. Dope.
All right.
Dope. Okay.
It's
moving
the word.
On.
The words are what matter. The
all right. And then you get a mug for $150. Now, you can get any one of them for $100. But if you want the full First Amendment set, the mug says the First Amendment now more than ever and then has the WAMC logo on it.
Yeah.
Yours will not have a piece of paper stuck to it. It will actually be a mug.
Yours is a mock-up.
This is a mock-up, yeah. Yes.
And by the way, I love that idea, you know, that it is the First Amendment, because that's what this is all about. Donald Trump has enjoyed the First Amendment. So should public radio stations and everybody else.
Alan, how can people make a pledge to the lockbox before the fun drive?
Well, thanks, Ray. I'm glad you asked. You can go directly to WAMC.org. That's the best way to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And I knew you knew it. I knew you were funning me all along. Go to WAMC.org, or you can pick up the phone and call 1-800-323-9262. And then just hit zero, and somebody will come and take your money.
You know, the fun drive begins 2 weeks from Monday. You and I will be there in Studio P.
It's
Studio P.
Production, yeah.
Performance Studio.
Performance Studio, you're right.
Studio P, yeah.
So that'll be fun.
Correct.
Pause, crickets, crickets,
wow.
Crickets.
No, it will be fun.
All right.
I love it. I really do love it, because it's when we really got to talk to everybody.
But we're hoping to get, we need to get to the lockbox half full. And that's $500,000. We're over, $300,000 right, Alan? So
yes,
we have to get to that $500,000 point. And
we don't have that much time to do it in.
We don't. We have just over 2 weeks, and we need to get it done. So on this day, as we talk about the First Amendment and we talk about this peaceful transfer of power, think of that and think of what this radio station means. WAMC.org. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get to more letters and finish up. As we speak, the Obamas are welcoming the Trumps to the White House. They are meeting on the steps of the White House, and the coverage of the inauguration of the 45th President of the United States will begin at 10 o'clock, and we will bring you that. But in the meantime, we will continue our discussion right after this. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable. And we just have a few minutes left before we go over to NPR coverage of the inauguration beginning at 10 o'clock, which, of course, leads up to the swearing-in ceremony at noon on the steps of the Capitol. So
hey,
we'll be getting to that. Yes, Alan.
Hey, Joe, what do you think of this story that is emerging about the FBI looking into the Russian-Trump relationship? I've always said that one is one of the most problematic for me. We've talked about, Teresa's just done a magnificent job of talking about the hotel. But, you know, the fact that it has risen now to an FBI investigation, some of the people who are denying anything to do with it, like the infamous Roger Stone and some of the others, are fascinating characters who have been around politics and dirty tricks for a long time. So it'll be interesting to see whether the FBI does come up with anything.
The American law enforcement and intelligence agencies are examining intercepted communications and financial transactions as part of a broad investigation into possible links between Russian officials and associates of President-elect Donald Trump, including his former campaign manager Paul Manafort, current and former senior American officials said. The continuing counterintelligence investigation means that Mr. Trump will take the oath of office on today, with his associates under investigation, and after the intelligence agencies concluded that the Russian government had worked to help elect him as president, Mr. Trump will oversee those agencies and have the authority to redirect or stop at least some of those efforts.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing on this one is this will really be a test of democracy, because who will investigate? In this New York Times story, the line that I found most intriguing is that of the half dozen, and I'm quoting here, of the half dozen current and former officials who confirmed the existence of the investigation, some said they were providing information because they feared the new administration would obstruct their efforts. And
likewise, though, in this New York Times piece, which I think is in today's paper, quoting here, the investigators have accelerated their efforts in recent weeks but have found no conclusive evidence of wrongdoing, the official said.
Right.
Well, let me put it this way. As you know, former president, New York State President Sampson, just went to jail, not for the things he was alleged to have done, because statute of limitations was there, but for lying to the FBI. Point made. Don't lie to the FBI. Don't say you didn't do it if you did it. That's all I got to say.
But then again, this is not Trump directly. This is associates of mm-hmm. Trump.
People surrounding him, Manafort and others, right?
Paul Manafort, of course, left the campaign rather early in the process.
In
official capacity.
Yes, but he remained in Trump Tower and when working with them.
I'm just setting up what the defense would be, correct? I mean, if they're going to say that we severed our ties, we had nothing to do
with
this individual.
Yes, we severed our ties, right. Roger Stone left much earlier, but was rumored to be still in conversation with them.
All right. So there is that issue. And then the other thing that I want to talk about just in our final moments, and I'll get to some letters, is the... Obviously, we've been talking about the nominees all week, and the story yesterday was Steve Mnuchin, President-elect Donald Trump's pick to head the Treasury Department, came under withering fire on Thursday for closing on homes in California, managing an offshore investment account, and initially failing to disclose almost $100 million in assets. You gotta carry the one. It's so important.
It's an extraordinary story. Oh, oops, I forgot. I forgot the $100 million. Unbelievable.
5 hours of contentious questioning. Democrats in the Senate Finance Committee pressed Mnuchin to explain how he could fail to disclose $95 million of real estate assets, including property in New York, Los Angeles, and Mexico, on his initial committee ethics questionnaire.
And along with this, one of the things that they did determine is that he foreclosed on many, many people, including military families of people who were deployed. And his response is, well, I did feel badly about that. But I think that there is a lot more questions to be asked of him. And it was interesting that he really, in many cases, did not answer the questions, but instead objected to the questions being asked. Mm. So that was a fascinating and troubling hearing. But I will say that as part of that hearing, Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri, she was asking him about how America could be sure that the debt that the Trump organization owed to foreign interests, and I'm quoting now, would not influence Mr. Trump's policies. And Mr. Mnuchin answered, well, that's a good question. And so I was surprised that he didn't have a more forceful answer on that question.
It is a good question.
Right.
Well, just for the record, it is a good way. Yes?
Well, I just wrote a column in which I made the exact point that you're talking about here, which is that somehow there seems to be a signal given to all of these appointees who are appearing before these committees to just, you know, disagree with the president, even though he is going to be their boss and can, you know, rip them right out of the office anytime that he wants to. But it does seem to be the way that they are going, and this is just one more example of it.
Well, it certainly raises some questions, and these are the same questions that were raised in writing by the group of generals and the group of economists and others in advance of the election, is what happens in a democracy when those in the cabinet or those in these positions these nominees do disagree with President Trump.
That's
definitely going to test our democracy.
It has been said, and I have no idea if this is true or not, that Trump values in his commercial dealings people in his organization who do have the guts to disagree with him. And so is it a plus? I think it's a plus to have people who speak their mind. I know Alan always is very happy when we're in meetings and I speak my mind. You appreciate that, right?
I do, very much so.
But on these core questions...
It's on the record now.
Yeah, it's on the record. Yeah. You got it on the record. You got it on tape.
Just like the members of the Senate are doing in these hearings, you're getting it on the record.
Exactly.
Well, yes, but I'm just wondering, because the Ray approach is that I'm just hearing is that he respects it, he wants it, and he'll get it. And the Allen suspicion is the name of the game is anything that will work to get you through, and then we'll see whether Trump will allow dissidence within his organization.
Are you saying it's a canard?
Yes.
What do you think he'll say today in his inaugural speech? Do you think he'll talk policy, Alan, or what do you think he's going
to do? I really have no idea because, you know, my problem with the guy is that I just think that he doesn't always, nothing means anything. He says one thing and then he says the other thing. He says the reverse of that. So, you know, if he says, I want to bring all Americans together, and by the way, let's get rid of NPR, and let's get rid of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and let's get rid of all the arts, and let's get rid of all of that. I want to bring all Americans together, but not that way.
I was interested. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, officially, he's saying that the policy will that the speech will be less policy driven and more about America and more about his path and how he got to this position.
Right, and I wonder what that. It'll be interesting to see what that turns out to be. Last night at the Lincoln Memorial, he did not use that moment to, you know, that has been used by other president-elects to set a tone and a direction and to unify the country. And he did not use that for that purpose. He used it to talk about the election and what a surprise and who supported him and who didn't. So it'll be interesting to see today what he does say and how he uses the moment.
I want to end just with a couple of letters. Sharon writes, Alan is right. Do these nominees disagree with Trump or just saying so to get passed? I think we've talked about that, right, Alan?
Yep.
Russian government minister admitted mid-election they met with Trump campaign folks. What happened to that story, asks Deborah.
Mm-hmm.
We also got this from Vincent, who says we are inviting a constitutional crisis by inaugurating Trump while he and his Kremlin crew are under investigation. We will be as guilty as Germans were for installing Hitler by installing a clearly illegitimate poser, Trump, as president. We also got this from Denise, who says, I believe the strategy of the nominees is to speak their mind, knowing full well that they'll be going along with Trump since they are there to serve the president. And she says, just wait. We also got this from Ursula, who says, this is regarding the hotel, wouldn't you think a person who's about to become president would put country above making money? And I guess that is certainly one of the
Well, it certainly could have been symbolic about this one, about the hotel, but he's choosing not to be.
Well, he did say, and his lawyer said it, that all profits will go to the federal government, the Treasury.
He also said that he donated to this. Well, I'm sorry, I'm being nice today, sir.
Ah, for a minute there, I saw that sly smile across your face. Well done.
I have a few more fun facts in case I start to slip.
That's right. If you start to slip, you have the
fun
facts.
I have a list of fun facts.
Yes, he's ready.
This one from Charles says, Alan, Trump is on both sides of the lease of his D.C. hotel, just like Dick Cheney, who was appropriating funds to Halliburton as vice president and cashing them as head of that company. It's going to get ugly, says Charles.
I think we can all assume that.
Right.
All right. We are going to wrap up. We're going to catch up with stuff, and then we'll begin our coverage beginning at 10 o'clock from NPR, and which will be taking us pretty much through
4 o'clock,
day.
I think.
Yeah, 4 o'clock this afternoon, and all things considered. So...
closing fun fact?
Yes.
the Lincoln Bible. He's going to be using the Lincoln Bible, and Abraham Lincoln used that first. Chief Justice Robert Taney swore him in, who was an adamant opponent of Lincoln at the time. And in fact, so much so that the court clerk attests that Taney did in fact administer the oath. So this is not the first time we've been here before.
Wow.
All right.
There we go.
We'll end there.
Democracy.
Alan, thank you very much. We'll be hearing from you throughout the weekend. Thank you very much. Ray, thank you for showing up. I like that. And Teresa, thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.